John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Well, I feel bad. Yesterday, the show ended, and within 3 minutes after the end of the show, Patrick Mahomes signs this monster 10-year, $45 million deal on an extension, and it's like, wow. And so we didn't get a chance to talk about that until 4 o'clock, but a monster contract. But the boy, and the great part about 10 to 12 is that a lot of things break during that time, both in all sports as far as stories. But this one broke a little bit after my show, so we'll get to talk about it today in the five biggest stories of the day.
Number one.
They are staggering numbers in many ways for Patrick Mahomes, but if you can believe it, it's actually a team-friendly deal. Patrick Mahomes had 2 years remaining. Those years remain intact. $27.8 million for the next 2 years. And then the 10-year extension for $450 million, an average of $45 million, kicks in. It allows the Chiefs to do what they want moving forward. It preserves their cap space. In the next couple of years, they have flexibility to try to repeat as Super Bowl champions.
Unique contract, 10 years, $45 million, and it keeps them on the team technically for 12 years. And they found a very unique way to guarantee the contract. Now, upon signing, the guarantee is only $63 million. And over the first 3 years of the contract, he's going to make $39.3 million a year. As Adam Schefter said, he's going to make what he was scheduled to make in a different payout. I mean, he gets a $10 million signing bonus and his same payout, $27.8 over the first 2 years. But what's unique about it is that for the first 5 years or so, 6 years of the contract, what the team can do is that they can guarantee a roster bonus. Like, for example, in 2022, by the third day of the league year in March, they can at least say, okay, we'll guarantee this. And by doing it that way, they were able to avoid what's the funding principle in this league. And what I mean by funding is that, you know, let's say that if you guarantee a contract, well, you basically have to fund it the year before. So, like, for example, that's why you see very few contracts with 3 years guaranteed, because, you know, you fund the, you're going to pay the first year, second year, you wait till February and then try to do that, and then you fund everything after that. Well, by funding it, and of course that means that you have to put it in the bank, and which is kind of a silly rule that the Players Association didn't eliminate, but it gives the team the ability to lock it up. It gives him the guarantee that he's going to make, and that goes all through the contract. And so, very unique deal. And so we're going to watch and see how that's going to affect Deshaun Watson. I don't honestly think it affects Dak Prescott. Reason is, I mean, he's talking, you know, more in that $34.5 to $37 million range. He wants to do a conventional 4-year contract. Jerry Jones wants 5. I do think something's going to get done. The one that it really affects is Deshaun Watson down in Houston. Because, you know, he, like Mahomes, has the ability to ask for near $40 million a year. And I know he wants to do more of a conventional deal. But it was interesting to see how this all came up and they were able to work around it. And, of course, the big challenge and one of the reasons why it's light in the front is that the team doesn't have the ability, you know, to know what the cap's going to be next year. You know, the cap's either going to go down, may stay the same, but it's not going to go up. You're not going to get that $10 million increase, but it always happens. And so because of that, you know, you had to try to work around it. So his cap number this year is 5.2, and he gets a $24 million cap number next year. But now we'll see how that affects the Chris Davis negotiations, because, you know, he's out there with a 16-1 franchise tag. He's worth $20.1 million. I don't know if they're going to be able to swing that, but what they were able to swing was a big contract for right now, Patrick Mahomes, may be considered the best quarterback in the game.
Number two.
This plan is only as good as the testing. And if there are flaws or errors in the testing, baseball's not going to happen this year. And I think Major League Baseball recognizes that, and I think the players recognize that. But no matter the enormity of the endeavor, they still have to get it right in order for it to work. And that's what the next couple weeks theoretically are for, to figure out how to get this thing functioning and going as smoothly as possible.
Well, Jeff Passan talking about the mess that's known as COVID testing and the mess that the baseball has got himself into. And again, it's bad planning and bad Rob Manfred and the whole group, because right now you had the A's, Astros, Nationals, and Angels had to have their Monday workouts postponed because they had all the testing issues. They didn't have the test back, or in some cases, they didn't have all the proper equipment, all those different things. A tester for the Angels didn't even show up in the stadium on Monday. Now, how bad is that? I mean, you got the players there, you're talking about player safety, and you're not living up to the words that need to be done. And so, as Jeff Passan was just saying, hey, if this continues to go this way, there's not going to be any baseball this year, and it's on baseball and the teams. Where you look at the Mariners and how well they've done. I mean, they came in on Wednesday. They got their tests. They got everything going as far as, you know, moving the sticks and getting everything on the field. And, you know, they're way ahead of where some of these teams are. And it's just ridiculous to think that two teams, and well, actually all the other teams except the Rangers in this division, have had problems like that. Schedule was released yesterday. The Mariners are going to open the season on the road against the Astros. So, and with team right now that's not able to practice because they haven't got the test back.
Number three.
There was a report from Adam Schefter that the Cleveland Browns offered him $18 million. I heard the same thing. And I can't imagine that deal is still on the table for Cleveland. And I wonder if, you know, the same thing that happened with the Seahawks could be happening with other teams, that whatever they offered to him, whatever offer that was back in March, April, May, that's not going to be there in July, August. And so maybe there is a situation where maybe his best offer is whatever the Seahawks are willing to offer him at that point. But even then, you know, I think the Seahawks, with their financial situation, they would have to start cutting guys.
Yeah, the Clowney situation continues to get worse for Clowney. First off, the Raiders had shown some interest, and I know that Mike Mayock had to hold back John Gruden because Mike wanted to be a little lower, and he's not as high on adding a pass rusher, and so that offer would be the lowest right now that's there, but they did make an offer on Clowney. Then, of course, news comes out this morning that the Cleveland Browns will be out of the mix and not involved with Clowney, because they took Olivier Vernon, took his $15.5 million salary, and just guaranteed most of it, and so he's now making 11. But I think that tells you that when we're listening and hearing that Clowney was being offered maybe 12 by the Cleveland Browns, and he didn't take it, and so they come in at 11, you would have to think at this stage Clowney's value is down to $10 or $11 million, if not less. Like, for example, you wonder, in Tennessee, they paid $9.5 million on a one-year deal for Vic Beasley. I think that they won't go above that, in my opinion, to pay Clowney. And so Clowney, I think, is more and more likely to remain a free agent when the camps start.
Number four.
Labor peace in the National Hockey League. What a concept, right? But on Monday, hockey fans got fantastic news. The NHL and the NHL Players Association announcing a tentative agreement on both a return to play plan to finish out the 2019-20 season after it was paused on March 12th due to the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as a memorandum of understanding on a new collective bargaining agreement that would begin next season and run for six seasons total.
Well, I'll tell you what, it was a big day for hockey yesterday because they got the agreement that they'll have the home city starting on July 13th, and then they'll travel to the hub on the 26th of July. And then you got Edmonton now is going to be available for the Western teams. Toronto is going to be available for the Eastern teams. And the league then coming up with the big move of getting a collective bargaining agreement that's going to be for four more years. It was set to expire after the 2022 season. So it looks like hockey has their business in order. The new CBA ends any danger of Seattle having any delays with a possible lockout. That's big news for hockey and good news for hockey.
Number five.
C.J. Procyse will not get the first down. The ball is out and the Browns have it. Cleveland with its first takeaway in this game. Devaro Lawrence came up with the loose football.
Olivier Vernon puts the hit on C.J. Procyse working down the line of scrimmage. Watch 54 coming in. Knocks it loose.
And that puts the crowd right back in it at the 45-yard line of Seattle.
So Olivier Vernon gets a deal, as we mentioned. It's going to be 1 year, $11 million, and it's all guaranteed after taking a cut of about $4.25 million. And so now he stays there. But that pretty well ends any hope of Clowney getting anything from the Cleveland Browns, because now you've got a guaranteed $11 million contract with Olivier Vernon. And had they signed Clowney or got an agreement with Clowney, they would have released Olivier Vernon. So I think that tells you the value that they have. And also they're trying to work on a contract extension for Myles Garrett. So they're pretty well set at the defensive end position. So once again, with Clowney waiting, and of course, you know, they weren't going to be able to firm anything up with him not being able to take a physical. Now that offer has passed, and so now it's down to Tennessee, the Raiders, and Seattle. I don't know if there's anybody else that's going to be involved here, but you know, I get the feeling what's going to end up happening is Clowney, if he understands now that his value is probably $10 million or less, may just wait till the end of training camp and then try to see if he can get some kind of a deal with the team. I don't know if Seattle would wait that long or if they keep the door open that long. The door's still open, but right now it's, you can say that the door for Cleveland just slammed Clowney in the foot. Hey, you can listen to the show on the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the impact that Patrick Mahomes' contract has for the future of Russell Wilson. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Under Further Review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
Well, it had to be a complicated deal because of the situation for revenue in the league right now. It's certainly not from the Chiefs' standpoint of not making money, but trying to be able to figure out how to do a contract where you don't know if the cap's going to go down, stay the same. You know it's not going to go up. And so in a unique way, what Lee Steinberg did was go ahead and work out a deal, 10 years, $45 million, keeping pretty much the money in the first 2 years about the same, you know, keeping the cap next year at $24 million, and then, which it was roughly, you know, what he was going to get as a fifth-year option guy, and then really starting to kick in and, you know, get big bonuses and, you know, trying to figure out a way to figure out future caps so that the deal was one that you can go ahead and take the roster bonuses and try to do that a couple years before and guarantee him. And it's kind of like guaranteeing him without necessarily guarantee him. But I think what you can see is that it's going to have an impact now, maybe not as much on Dak Prescott in the future. It's going to, you know, and eventually able to do it. But let's say if Dak gets a deal and Deshaun Watson gets a deal, you know, they're going to get another chance to get a deal. And so we'll see how that affects him. But it takes the ratchets up the number to $45 million a year. And that's going to be when Russell Wilson eventually gets to the end of his contract. And so lots to look at there. So I know Brock Huard explained what he thought about the contract and how the Mahomes deal affects Russell Wilson.
What happens a couple of years from now, Brock, when this contract finally expires? Do you think the Seahawks would give him something that obviously is not going to be this $500 million contract? He's going to be 34, 35 years old. But do you think that they would pay him as much as some other desperate team might want to pay him to get their hands on him?
Yeah, I think that all comes down to the TV and gambling money that I think many people speculate is going to grow the cap. Not right now, not in the short term, not amidst this pandemic and loss of revenue and the possible loss of fans and everything else in the seats this season. But when it rolls back together, I think there's a lot of belief around that, you know, the next TV deals, there's no reason to believe and that they're going to go down. And even, you know, if they can play these games this year, I am sure those ratings are going to be very, very high because people are going to want to watch that product if they can't be in the stadium. So TV money is going to go up. You would think the gambling money, as we start to see that proliferate around the country, that is going to go up. That cap is going to go up. So I think Russell will be in a really good spot in a couple years when he's done, if he continues to play at this level, to say, yeah, sorry, Drew Brees at his age, Phillip Rivers at his age, still made, you know, nearly what they made in their prime, and I'd still like to see $35, $40, $45 million a year.
Yeah, and I think that it's certainly this for Russell and his agents got to be a good thing, because now, you know, if you're as good as Wilson and as good as Patrick Mahomes, you know, that's the top end. And of course, that allows him, of course, you have to make a judgment then with his age. You know, do you start to taper it back a little bit like they have with Ben Roethlisberger and Phillip Rivers and now Tom Brady and all those? But of course, by that time, most of those guys will be out of the league, and, you know, and Russell would be sitting there. But I think what this does, it tells you that at the very least, you know, There's a good chance that the next contract for Russell will be $45 million, if not a little bit old, more than that. And I think that that works out. And again, you figure that Deshaun Watson is going to probably end up, at 39 or 39.5, somewhere in that area. I think, Prescott will be 35 million or so, right around Russell Wilson's contract. But $45 million, Curtis Rogers. When you saw and heard about the deal, what was your reaction?
It kind of reminds me, John, of Alex Rodriguez's contract that he signed with the Texas Rangers back in 2001, where it was such an outlier from what we've seen previously with deals. But you'd factor in his age. He's, 24 years old. He's already got a Super Bowl and an MVP trophy in his closet there. I mean, can you think of a player in NFL history more deserving of a contract like this? And the list is very short. Very few quarterbacks have ever accomplished what Patrick Mahomes has accomplished throughout their entire careers, and he's done it, through year three. He's heading into year four here. To me, I look at the just staggering numbers of this, and somebody was going to be the first quarterback to get numbers like this. And I think Patrick Mahomes and what he means to the NFL, what he means to the Kansas City Chiefs organization, I think he's actually kind of deserving of the number he got. Now, just because it was so far out there from what we've seen, I don't know if anybody expected him to reset the market the way he did, but somebody was going to eventually do it like this, and Patrick Mahomes, why not him?
Yeah, and I think the way you look at this deal is that each side had their issues, right? For example, naturally, if you're Mahomes and you're Lee Steinberg, you want to get $40 million a year, okay? So how are you going to do that and structure the deal so you don't have to break up the team? Because that's the tough part about this deal is that, you're trying to add what'll be a $24 million cap number next year when the cap's not going to go up and it's going to possibly go down. It may stay the same. And you're trying to make sure that you keep as many of your 20 starters as you possibly can because, you've watched what happened in Los Angeles once they took the $34 million deal for Jared Goff. You saw what happened. They fell apart within 2 years and got to be a 7-win team or a 9-win team, and they've got to get rid of 11 starters on defense over a 2-year period. You've watched Minnesota. They took the big deal with Kirk Cousins, and then they had so many other big deals that they had to end up cutting and letting go 4 guys on defense, and they traded Stephon Diggs. So they've had to make major changes, and you're seeing some of the things going on with the San Francisco 49ers. But what the Chiefs were standing there saying, now, wait a second, to do a deal with Patrick, we've got to get through the next 2 years. We've got to get through this year and next year with the cap not going up. And so how can we do that? So what you do is that you delay some of the payments that he would be making right now. Like, for example, instead of giving him a $50 million signing bonus, they gave him 10. And you spread that out for 5 years, and it's $2 million under the cap. Basically, you keep the same salaries and money that he's going to be paid the first 2 years and then start ratcheting it up after into the third and fourth years of the contract.
Yeah, and you look at just how both sides kind of came out on top on this. You wonder if other players are going to try to maximize their dollar amount if it can get them, something in the Mahomes range of, $500 million is, yeah, just it's so mind-boggling just saying it out loud. $500 million he could earn over the course of this contract. But you look at guys like Deshaun Watson who are coming up here. What do you think his number could be now that Mahomes has not just reset the market but blown it completely wide open?
Yeah, they have to watch out in Houston because, no team has done as bad of a job as far as the cap management and how that's going to affect the future. But, whatever kind of way, it's got to be $39.5 or $40 million, and maybe what this does, because Watson is in that upper class of quarterbacks, and so I think he can command $39 to $40 million. Now you wonder, what's more important to him, the average or the structure or anything like that? But certainly it gives the Texans the idea. It's like, okay, we can't get him cheap. We got to get him close to 40. So they may have to start working on that and figuring it out. So, but again, Watson's going to benefit, I think, from this because now they've taken the number up so much. I guess what it comes down to is that you look at the next 4 years, and because I thought it was interesting that 39.3 was his average salary for the first 3 years of the contract. Then it jumps up, and so that does probably put Watson in a position to ask for a little bit more than 40. But again, it puts the Texans in a position to say, hey, you got to get somewhere close to 39.3 a year for the first 3 years of the deal.
Well, and you look at all the players that the Texans have paid on that offense. You know, the running backs, David Johnson's making $13 million. Their wide receivers especially making
four wide receivers totaling $43 million a year.
Yeah, that's absurd.
And $11 million center, a $22 million left tackle.
The spending on that offense for the Texans is absurd, and now they're going to have to be faced with paying Deshaun Watson something north of $40 million per year. I don't see how they're able to make it all work without letting go of some pieces on that offense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's going to be the thing that every team's going through. Like, I look at the Prescott deal, and that's why I think he's going to get, they have to get something done, because now what you're talking about with him signing the tender, the only way they can keep him on the team next year is franchising at 37-7 when they've got seven contracts right now that are totaling $106 million of 2022 cap room. So then if you have to put 37-7 on Dak Prescott, now what you're looking at is that you got $143 million tied up, $144 million. If you put the exclusive, you got $145 million. And so if you do that, boom, you have to let guys go. I mean, you have to let probably Amari Cooper go. You have to maybe let Lil Collins go. I mean, you're not going to be able to do anything with Van Der Esch. I mean, they've got to get something done. That's why at least they got $24 million on next year for the Chiefs with the deal that he has coming up. So in the end, you got to get something done in Dallas, but they got something done in Kansas City. Hey, tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle. Remember, you can always listen to 710 on your smart speaker or the app. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the Mahomes contract with ESPN's Bill Barnwell. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, Patrick Mahomes gets his deal done, an interesting deal. And joining us to talk about Mahomes in the National Football League, one of the best analysts you can have is Bill Barnwell from ESPN.com. And so what was your first reaction when we find out that Patrick Mahomes did a very unique 10-year extension that was a little light up front as far as the money and big in the back?
Yeah, it's really fascinating, John. At first I just thought about, the idea of Patrick Mahomes going to the bank and checking his direct deposit slip and seeing, $450 million, as if he was getting it at once, and thought, hey, that'd be kind of cool. I wouldn't mind that too much if I was Patrick Mahomes, but of course, with any NFL contract, when you get closer to the details, you see just how it's structured and kind of the story each contract tells. And I think this contract does tell a really interesting story. And it's sort of what you said in your question. You're looking at a contract that is pretty light up front, especially over the next 3 years, before hitting really lofty heights later in the deal. And I think what makes this fascinating is that, on a typical deal in the NFL, most of those numbers late in contracts aren't guaranteed, even for superstars. You don't really see those numbers guaranteed, especially if it's this sort of contract where it's, a 10-year deal, which is so rare. But Mahomes does have some sort of guarantee structure on those numbers. So really by doing this, even if he left money on the table, as long as he's really, able to step onto a football field and play at any level, he's really guaranteed himself a lot of this money over the next 12 years.
Yeah, but the funny part about the guarantees, because I know that everybody goes overboard on the guarantees and they don't study it as closely as they should. These deals, particularly the guarantees after about 3 years or so, are based on roster bonuses that have to be implemented if you're on the roster 3 days into the league year. And so it's not a guarantee if the team can get out of it. And of course, you can take them off the roster. That's not going to happen. But the trade-off is, it's like, okay, fine, we don't guarantee anything past a couple years, because again, it was a $10 million signing bonus that's prorated for 5 years, but then you look at the rest of the guarantees they can get out of it. But also, Patrick gets his money early because he gets it then in the third day of the league year.
Yeah, I mean, the Chiefs basically are making two bets. In the first half of this contract, they're betting that they can pay Patrick Mahomes 2 years in advance and not regret it. And at the end of the contract, they're betting they can pay Patrick Mahomes a year in advance or guarantee his money a year in advance and still feel like they can get away with it. And, you know, I thought about it, John, writing my column today, and I don't know what you think, but are there any other players in the NFL where you could see this sort of deal or this sort of structure make sense for both sides?
No. And the reason is, it's like, you know, other than have we seen a quarterback all of a sudden emerge as the best quarterback in the league 3 years into his career? And it's really been that way now for more than a year. We've never seen something like this. And then, you know, it's great for the Chiefs to be able to lock him up for such a long period of time. But, you know, we've never seen very few quarterbacks that have risen as quickly as him.
Yeah, I mean, think about his resume over the course of what's really been 2 years as a starter, plus, you know, that one start in a meaningless game as a rookie. I mean, you have league MVP, you have Super Bowl MVP. Nobody else I can think of has done that. The closest thing might be something like Dan Marino, who, you know, league MVP in his second season, very similar to that Mahomes breakout year, made it to a Super Bowl, did not win. But, you know, I think that's really the only guy who comes close in the modern era of football in terms of comparables. So, you know, I think rightfully Patrick Mahomes' side said, hey, we need something absolutely special because you can't even compare Patrick to other quarterbacks. And I think the Chiefs said, hey, you're 2 years away from free agency. You know, we still have a lot of leverage. And so I think we kind of found a deal that makes sense for both sides given that criteria.
Well, and the other thing that the Chiefs had to deal with, which they did, is finding a way to do a long-term deal when you don't know what the cap's going to be next year. Because at the very least, you know, the cap's not going to go up. And the league's been used to that $10 million a year bump since, what, 2013. And so what they were able to do is, you know, keep the deal at 39.3 for the beginning 3 years of the contract, and then, which everybody thought $40 million was going to be the number, but also have the flexibility to be able to then come back and kind of guess what they think the cap's going to be when the cap goes up with the new TV contracts. And so I found that very unique.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a contract that really the first 2 years, we don't see Patrick Mahomes' cap numbers budge. He is the same as it was before he signed an extension. So, you know, the Chiefs over the next 2 years, it changes maybe what they can do. Now maybe they can go out and keep Chris Jones and sort of structure it in a more traditional way to have him over the long term. Maybe they can re-sign Sammy Watkins next year if they thought, well, we can't do that because we're going to be re-signing Patrick Mahomes. You know, they have more flexibility because they were able to structure the deal this way. And, of course, you're giving up more in the long run in terms of those guarantees, but I think you had two sides where, you know, they were both willing to make that long-term commitment. So when the cap does go up, you know, obviously Patrick Mahomes is going to have a lot of guaranteed money, but I do think that, to be honest with you, at the end of the day, when you look at history, look at how the cap has risen, how quarterback contracts are risen, it wouldn't be crazy to think that Patrick Mahomes could be on a below-market deal over the second half of this contract, even when he's averaging, you know, $50 million a year on that second half of this deal.
Yeah, because the unique part about this, because it's going to play into the next contracts that are going to be negotiated, whether it's going to be Dak Prescott and Deshaun Watson, is that, you know, where this deal could eventually get outdated, you figure that Prescott and Watson can at least get one more deal after the next deal they get and still be on pace to see where they are in comparison to Patrick Mahomes, who's, you know, going to be tied up for such a long time.
Yeah, absolutely, John. And I think that's sort of the interesting, you know, alternative here that Patrick Mahomes could have considered is, we're seeing guys around the NFL take shorter deals right now. We're seeing players prefer shorter contracts. They want to hit free agency or approach free agency again after the NFL signs their new TV deals in 2021. I think 2022 coming up is when sort of the negotiations will really kick in. Maybe they'll sign it early. You know, that happened last time, but we can't say for sure. But we know the cap in the medium term is going to go up. In the short term, it could go down because of the lack of, you know, local revenue. So you look at this deal with Patrick Mahomes, it's the opposite, right? You know, instead of signing a three-year deal or a short-term contract, it's one of the longest contracts in NFL history. And that's why I think it's really going to be difficult for Watson and Prescott to sort of make comparables with the Mahomes deal because it is such a different sort of structure. I mean, you know, John, you look at the first 5 years of this contract, Patrick Mahomes is going to make about $28 million a year. Dak Prescott's contract with the Cowboys, 5 year, you know, just a 5 year deal, it's probably going to be about $34-35 million a year. So when you think about, you know, the idea that Dak Prescott's going to be making, you know, 25% more than Patrick Mahomes, on paper it doesn't make sense, or, you know, on the football field it might not make sense, but in terms of their leverage, in terms of their contract structures, that's probably how it's going to work out.
Yeah, because I honestly think that this contract doesn't affect Dak whatsoever. It affects probably Deshaun Watson a little bit more because, you know, Watson right now, I think I don't know if you agree, but I think that you know, Watson is a better quarterback, I think, than Prescott. And Prescott's going to, you know, I think he'll get a deal done. But this goes to a question that you follow very closely. The Super Bowl windows for teams, how much shorter are they getting? Like, for example, you got the Super Bowl window right now for the last 2 years for Mahomes. He does this long-term deal, but now they have to start you know, paying for the success they've had with the Chris Joneses. And so, like, for example, you go down to Dallas. You know, Dallas has the Prescott deal they're trying to get, well, they're slowly trying to get done, but now they have, you know, like seven guys next year that have $106 million of cap, and if they have to put the second franchise tag on Prescott, they're going to have to start breaking some things up. We watch the Rams. Mm-hmm. The Rams go from a Super Bowl in 2 years. They had to eliminate 11 starters on defense, a slot guy, top running back, a top wide receiver, and three offensive linemen. How much shorter now is that Super Bowl window if you're paying a quarterback?
It's definitely shorter. And I think it becomes a question of, you know, can you change your philosophy to account for the changes you made at quarterback? And I think, you know, when it came to the Rams, not only were they paying Jared Goff, but they were also paying, like you said, Todd Gurley. They were paying Brandon Cooks. They were paying Aaron Donald. They were paying Andrew Whitworth. They were paying these stars up and down their roster and sacrificing draft picks to get some of those stars in the process. So we ended up with no players, really, who were valuable on cheap rookie deals. And some portion of your roster always has to be that. And so at the end of the day, you know, I think when you make a decision to pay Mahomes or pay a Prescott, you have to kind of be willing to sacrifice elsewhere. You have to be willing to say, okay, we're not going to pay, you know, Tyrone Crawford, or we're going to, you know, let Leighton Vander Esch leave at the end of his rookie deal, or we're going to, you know, move on from Travis Frederick to retire, and obviously, or we're not going to pay Zeke Elliott, which of course they did. You have to be willing to sacrifice elsewhere. We saw it with the Seahawks where, you know, of course they paid Russell Wilson, paid a lot of their stars, and then they sacrificed their offensive line and wanted to go on the cheap there, and that didn't work out for them. So it's a tricky formula. And I don't know that anyone's really solved the formula of, you know, outside of the Patriots, solved that formula of how do you win with this expensive veteran quarterback year after year. So, you know, I think for the Chiefs, if they want to keep that window exposed for as long as possible, they're going to have to maybe pay less to their wide receiver core and the receiving core with Travis Kelce as well. They may have to make some tough choices and sort of think that Mahomes is going to be able to propel whoever they have at receiver to the next level.
Yeah, Bill, great stuff. Now, what do you have on ESPN.com this week?
So, Patrick Mahomes, of course, everything breaking down that deal. And then last week I went through the class of 2018 quarterbacks, the four starters, and broke down sort of the progress they've made over 2 years. So lots of detail on Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, and Sam Darnold. So if you're interested in any of those four quarterbacks, you'll find a lot of information about that on ESPN.com.
Bill Barnwell, great stuff. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Sean.
Hey, be sure to check out the professor's notes on 710sports.com. The professor's notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. Coming up next, we're going to go behind the lines and check out what's going on in the National Football League. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, a little battle going on between the Players Association and the NFL, which I still think ultimately will get resolved, and the battle is involving the preseason games. You know, last week in a conference call with the all the players, you know, they came back and they said they should not have a preseason game because, again, it's too much of a risk to put all the efforts into the games that count as opposed to the preseason games. And apparently, you know, they had a joint committee between owners and players that, you know, said shorten the preseason. And, of course, they did. They shortened them from 4 to 2. So you have to wonder, what is a negotiating thing that the players might be wanting? Because, you know, they can hold back having the players come in, some players 7 days before the start of training camp to get them indoctrinated. But also on the other side of it, can the trade-off be you do that and you say, okay, you get the 7 days with the rookies, some quarterbacks and some players, so you can take a look at them and get them to come in a little earlier and get them started and catch them up on what they missed in the offseason program at the expense of the two preseason games. It's like so far in a lot of ways, a lot of the things that the owners have wanted, the players haven't given. And I look at the history and some of the stuff has been right from the player side. For example, the owners wanted to have and the coaches want a little bit of a mini camp toward the end of June, after June 15th. And the players said no. And they were right because it would have been a bad time to be able to do it. But on the preseason games, the NFL can implement them and just play them. So I don't know. I'm leaning toward Curtis thinking it may not be a bad idea not to play any preseason games.
Yeah, I'm definitely leaning towards the players on this one because what's most important in the NFL season? It's the regular season and the playoffs. The preseason ultimately doesn't mean a lot for guys who are guaranteed to make the roster. Obviously, it's huge. It's hugely important for guys who are on the fringe of the roster, especially undrafted free agents. But if they don't have, most teams, I think, have a good idea as to what their 53-man roster is going to look like. Or, well, now it'll increase a little bit more. But I think in order for the league to really say that we have the players' health in mind when making these decisions, I just don't see the point in playing two preseason games, especially if teams are going to be able to get a good look at who they have in camp. And yeah, it's not game speed per se, but it's right in front of your very own eyes. And, I wonder how many players, for example, the Seahawks have, that a great preseason would launch them onto the roster ahead of somebody else. Last year we saw guys have good preseasons. We've seen it time and time again here in Seattle, guys have good preseasons. I think it was Cason Williams a few years ago was looking amazing in preseason. He got cut. Jazz Ferguson last year had a pretty good preseason early on. He got cut. Paxton Lynch, remember the the fervor that was around him after the first two games of the preseason? It was like, oh, well, this guy, not only is he a star in the NFL, could he have some value, in a trade? He didn't even make the Seahawks roster. He was third string with the Steelers at one point, backing up Duck Hodges of all people.
Still is.
It still is. Yeah. So, you look at just the importance of preseason games, I get a sense that most teams kind of have a feel as to what their 53-man roster is going to be. And I don't know if, especially in a year like this, that it's going to be as important as it was in years past.
See, and one of the, and I'm glad the players brought this up because, I chart too many things, but one of the things I chart is ACL sprains and or ACL tears, and then also the Achilles tears. And, I'm still trying to get the exact number, but I think there was 51 ACL tears, 52 ACL tears in 2011, and there was over 20 Achilles tears. And as the Players Association came out and said yesterday, Achilles tears doubled. Right. And then you had a 44% increase in hamstrings. And if you now have, all this slow ramp up and then all of a sudden you play a game, you're going to lose, you're going to lose players and they're going to be injured. And that's going to affect your team's roster and the cap. And so like you watched last year that, you had guys like Sean McVay and Matt Nagy and several other coaches didn't play any of the starters in the preseason. Didn't even use them. Didn't put them on the field. And so do you really want to risk putting a starter out there, or do you want to risk some guys that maybe you have a young guy that you think might be good to those type of injuries? And then not to mention the fact that, now you're having that contact at a very close level that you could spread the virus.
Yeah. And as we all know in the NFL, there's contact on every play. There's players breathing on each other every play. It's going to be very tough for the NFL to sort of combat that. Maybe, these helmet companies are able to create a face shield that will, snap into a player's helmet that will cut down on the, the exchange of breath and whatnot. But it's just going to, I don't know if there's enough time right now to put that stuff in motion between now and when the start of training camp is, which is going to be on the 28th for most ball clubs. But, hopefully the NFL's got some wheels in motion here. John, not a good story this morning with DeSean Jackson in Philadelphia posting some anti-Semitic statements on social media. obviously, there's potential for a suspension from the Eagles organization. This is a team that's already kind of thin at wide receiver. They did draft Jalen Reagor. But, John, not a good, obviously not a good move on Deshaun Jackson's part to post what he did. We're not going to say what he posted,
yeah.
But just where would a suspension or a release of Deshaun Jackson put the Eagles right now?
Well, I mean, it put them behind because, I mean, you look at the Cowboys. I mean, the Cowboys are that much better at the wide receiver position, that much better at with Lamb coming in on the draft. So they're in good shape, and the Eagles aren't. And they, you know, but they got a tough situation. He's got a $4.8 million roster guarantee or a salary guarantee. Now, if they suspend him, that probably can eliminate the guarantee and put him in a position to, you know, go ahead and they can maybe let him go, because one of the things that the Eagles are going to do, and I know when we talked to Bill Barnwell and did everything earlier in the show, talking about how that window starts to close, and you know, you look and there's going to be a lot of guys. You know, at the moment, the Eagles are like $46 million over the cap, or $60 million over the cap, so they've got to make some revelations and have to do some things after the season. But I guess the talent of Deshaun Watson is there, but I think that business-wise, they may want to try to do something so they can put themselves in a position. If they want to cut him, they can cut him.
Yeah, and it just kind of makes the second-round pick of Jalen Hurts a little, even more, you know,
yeah,
even more head-scratching when you've got a wide receiver group that we all knew wasn't very deep to begin with. They do take Jalen Reagor, who I don't know if anybody had him pegged as high as the Eagles did. It's kind of a surprise that they took him in the first round, but now, I mean, if Deshaun Jackson's a no-go for the 2020 season, you got to wonder why they went after Jalen Hurts in the second round, you know, considering they've got Carson Wentz already there.
No doubt, and particularly as good of a second round as this was a very good second round, one of the best you can find. And so, yeah, I think that I immediately ripped it once it happened, and I'm not changing my position, and the Jackson thing could make it even worse.
Yeah, absolutely. It would leave them in a very tough bind that, as we learned last year, wide receiver play, if they had any semblance of wide receiver play, the Eagles probably would have been a much better team.
Exactly. Well, coming up, we'll get a chance to get back together with Sean Salisbury. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.